The 17th Annual State of the Tribes Address was delivered this afternoon by John Johnson Sr., president of the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. In the speech, Johnson tackled issues like treaty rights, the economic health of the sovereign nations in Wisconsin, a call to change school mascots, and more. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you listen to or watch the speech? What stood out to you? What issues resonated with you today? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Mary Annette Pember is a national correspondent for Indian Country Today. She's also a citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Wisconsin Ojibwe. Mary Annette, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, what stood out to you particularly about the address today?
Well, I think the things that you'd mentioned, and also, you know, these racial disparities in the legal system in Wisconsin. I think Native men are likely to draw prison sentences at like the highest rate of any ethnicity, something like 34%. Also, the Wisconsin Regional Mental Health and Treatment Facility that he spoke of, and the governor, I think, has allocated $12.3 million for two new regional crisis centers. Executive Order 39 affirming government to government relationships between tribes and states, underscoring tribal sovereignty. Walleye fishing and spearing, ongoing issue. You know, and just the importance of natural resources for Native people. The other thing I noticed was a mention of Senate Bill 69 requiring Wisconsin schools, I guess now it's Act 30, requiring schools to incorporate lessons regarding the Holocaust and other genocides. And Chairman Johnson suggested that included in those genocides might be something like the Sandy Lake tragedy of 1850, in which like about 400 Ojibwe died while being lured to Wisconsin for government rations. Missing and murdered Indigenous women, that's certainly a national issue. And I understand that Wisconsin Department of Justice has allocated like $300,000 to address that. Mascots, that's still, you know, I think that hasn't gotten enough traction yet to retire all, requiring a law, you know, requiring schools to retire those kinds of Native mascots. There's only a few states that have enacted those laws. And I think that's really, those are the kind of the things that stood out to me.
And we'll dig deeper into some of those issues. One overarching theme, and this is something I hear often in these State of the Tribes addresses, is kind of state-tribal relations 101, with the idea that people might look at what are treaty-established rights and thinking they were, you know, special gifts or special privileges given to Native Americans. John Johnson Sr. today talking about, no, these are things that were negotiated and defined in treaties. These are obligations, I guess, from the U.S. or the state government. Can you talk about that and how it's misunderstood sometimes?
Yes. I mean, I think that a lot of people have the sort of view that Native people have, quote unquote, special rights. But, you know, I recall working on a story and interviewing a Native elder actually in South Dakota. And he said to me, you know, when he worked quite often with non-Native people in the construction industry. And he said when the people would make those comments, he would say, you know, if your relatives had negotiated an agreement with the U.S. government, I bet you'd have that agreement laminated and in your back pocket, ready to pull out in case, you know, you thought that any of your rights were being overlooked. And I think that's probably an astute look, a view of that. These are things that our people negotiated. And, you know, we gave up, our ancestors gave up a great deal of land. During the course of that, actually, we're not afforded all of the promises that we were given. For instance, the rights to hunt, fish, and gather in the ceded territory. That only finally was verified by the Voight decision, I think like in the late 70s, early 80s. So before that time, you know, Native people on reservations in Wisconsin sometimes were subject to the same state hunting and fishing laws that the rest of the population was. And Native people in particular, with their low incomes, depend on subsistence hunting and gathering to live. So that's a little bit of background on that, I think.
We're talking to Mary Annette Pember, national correspondent for Indian Country Today, looking at today's State of the Tribes address delivered to the state legislature this year by the president of the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, John Johnson Sr. Want to give a listen as we start to dig into some of the particular issues you listed earlier. President Johnson here early in the speech talking about addiction treatment options in his tribe, drug enforcement efforts, especially as it pertains to opioids. Here's a listen.
Fentanyl and meth remain an issue that impacts our entire region. Drugs are killing people in northern Wisconsin and across the country. Drugs don't discriminate.
And this, Mary, is one issue that doesn't just affect members of tribes in Wisconsin or the rest of the population. This is one that kind of cuts across all boundaries, as President Johnson was saying there. What kind of issues do you look at when it comes to addiction and the opioid addiction problem in particular?
Well, I think especially for Native people, it kind of underscores the lack of resources we might have medically, you know, for mental health and just our, you know, kind of our inadequate infrastructure. So often we are keenly affected, I think, by that. And I, you know, I've seen some numbers that the pandemic really has contributed to higher rates of use, you know, as people have been cooped up and, you know, there's little to do. And plus people lost jobs. I mean, it's been kind of a perfect storm, I think, for a lot of people. And it's a big issue in rural Wisconsin. I think that as Chairman Johnson noted, that cuts across nationalities.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Nancy is with us in Minocqua. Nancy, hello.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I listen every year when I can, and that I feel that this state of the tribes should be live streamed into our school systems across Wisconsin, because we have a large Native population. And I think that it would get rid of a lot of the misinformation that a lot of the Caucasian white people have about the treaties, about the spearing, about the Native's rights. And I just find it so interesting. I listened to the entire thing today.
Nancy, thanks for calling in and sharing that. Mary, your thoughts? Nancy would like to have the speech more widely heard, including in schools. And I think just more education on these issues in general.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think there was, wasn't there a bill enacted in the 80s requiring schools to teach more Native history and, Act 31 adopted in 89. You know, how many people even know how many tribes are in Wisconsin? There are 11 tribes. People are often surprised at that. Unless you live, and even people who live immediately adjacent to reservations, I'm often shocked at their lack of awareness. And I wonder, you know, what precipitates that? I guess, you know, one, the lack of education in schools. You know, Natives are really cast as a denizens of sort of a dead past, but we aren't really framed in the current culture. So, yeah, I think that, you know, we need to encourage state schools to include those lessons on history and culture and contemporary Native life.
Nancy, thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. You mentioned, Mary, environmental issues. President Johnson said, made the case that at this time anyway, heavy metal mining in the state should be, quote, rejected as a threat to all, end quote. He was referring to a mine near the Lac des Flambeaux area. This is a question in other parts of the Great Lakes. What do you make of what he had to say about mining in the state?
Well, you know, Wisconsin really owes their mining laws pre-Governor Walker, I think, to tribes. You know, if we look back at Mole Lake and their rejection of Rio Tinto Zinc, I think, if I'm remembering the name correctly, it was really the use of treaty rights. They were able to keep those people out. And those that kind of mining, particularly, you know, in Minnesota, they're pursuing these copper mines. And even now the new taconite mining to mine these lower quality iron ores, you know, they release a lot of sulfides that have a very negative impact, I think, on our waterways, you know, on fish and wild rice. So, I mean, it has for everybody. Everybody requires water and to exist. And, you know, I think that people often see these as, quote unquote, tribal issues, but they aren't. They're human issues.
Let's go to another caller now. Adam is with us in Madison. Adam, hi.
Hi there. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'd like to just kind of make a comment and a question as far as, like, how public media and what their role is in giving Native peoples in Wisconsin the opportunity to tell their own stories and their own voices. So like, for instance, you know, Wisconsin Public Television, Wisconsin Public Radio, versus, I know in Canada there is quite a bit of public arts funding and public media funding dedicated to giving Native First Nations people there those opportunities.
Thanks a lot for the call. And I can't speak myself to all, what the things we've done in the past, but your thoughts on that, Mary, the role of public media in working maybe with tribal organizations to talk more about these issues?
Well, I think, you know, Wisconsin has done a very good job, particularly in their public media. You know, I worked in mainstream media for years before I joined Indian Country Today. And some of the reason I left mainstream media was that I was really forbidden from covering Native issues for the most part. I was discouraged on the basis that I would lack sufficient objectivity to cover Native issues because I'm a Native woman. And I remember countering an editor with the comment, you know, I noticed you're sending off white men, white male reporters to cover City Hall. You know, politicians there for the most part are white men, and yet you don't seem to have any concerns about their maintaining their objectivity. Unfortunately, I think, you know, mainstream media is, you know, it's another institution in this country. And, you know, I think many of the quote unquote, you know, accepted tenets of journalism, aside from, of course, one wants to be accurate and true. But I think, you know, every journalist comes to this work with a perspective. And the sort of embraced perspective has always been that of, you know, of white folks versus people of color. And I think, you know, I started in this business in 1986, and I haven't really seen a lot of changes regarding hiring. And I think it goes far deeper than hiring, just hiring a person of color and throwing them into this mix where, you know, we still have these same mentalities. I don't know if it really makes that much difference. I mean, mainstream media does require some very basic changes, I think, to the way that they cover the world and people of color.
We continue our conversation about the 17th annual State of the Tribes address. Our guest is Mary Annette Pember, national correspondent for Indian Country Today. You could join in with your reactions to today's speech at 800-642-1234. We heard today about the persistence of racism faced by Native Americans. President Johnson talked about encountering that himself and hoping his grandkids wouldn't have to be talking about the same thing down the road. Here's a listen to some of what he had to say about that.
I don't really know how to explain it because, you know, I've had to endure it when I was in school and the service and everything else. But you know what? I don't want to tell these guys about it because it's hateful. You know, it's something we got to fix.
And Mary, I understand from the transcript that was an unscripted part of Johnson's speech and a powerful moment in it. Can you talk about his reference to his experiences there?
I couldn't quite hear him when he said that he didn't want to share, I think, the details with his children. Was that what he said?
That he didn't want to share it here, I think, today, but talking about enduring racism in the school and in military service and beyond.
Yeah, I think, you know, most of us as Native people have gotten those, have those experiences. And it does sort of chip away at you, you know, it does undermine you. And but I think we do have to, you know, talk to our children about it. You know, how do you continue to hold your head up high? How do you respond? How do you not let it chip away at you? And I think that until you've had that kind of thing happen to you, you really don't fully understand it. I know I've, in my work with mainstream media, I just was, as I thought of it now, I was recalling, there was an editor, a white male editor, he was very good. And he was always just very dismissive of, you know, people's claims of racial prejudice. But his daughter, married a black man and they had a child. And of course, he quite loved the grandchild. And he would see the child's, you know, people's reactions sometimes out in public. And, you know, until you feel that, I think, you know, it cuts to your heart and it comes in a personal way, you can't really appreciate it in a true sense.
Do we have, Mary, you think, enough venues to talk across the lines of race and culture about these issues so that you don't have to wait until you have a kid of color if you're a white person to start to appreciate these issues?
A short answer, no. But how do we make them? Man, you got me. I don't know. Some people just, a white person in America is to have the luxury of choice. You know, not saying, there's a lot of white people that are poor. However, as I said, you have that luxury of choice. You get to, you can choose to ignore it or for not to be important to your lives. But, people of color, should we choose to ignore it, sooner or later, somebody will present us with it. So we don't have that, that luxury. So, and as far as, how does one, awaken people? I don't know if that can be forced on people. People have to have a desire first. And I think we're in a place now, often we have people who feel, I think a lot of people are feeling wrongly accused, about something that they feel they had no responsibility for, something that happened in the past. And I think that's just sort of a knee-jerk reaction that people are having, which is not surprising. It's very human. How do you get people to get past that? I really don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I guess just to continue to talk about it, as uncomfortable as it is.
And turning back to environmental issues, Mary, I understand you mentioned to our producer you were surprised that, or you thought it was interesting anyway, that the Enbridge pipeline concern didn't get brought up in today's State of the Tribes address. Could you talk a little bit about that issue and why you thought it was interesting that it wasn't there in the speech today?
Well, I think that's one of the things to remember when we hear the State of the Tribes address. It's kind of like hearing, a presidential address or the State of Wisconsin address. I mean, presumably that would be given by somebody who would have a political leaning. Well, Native people are no different than anyone else. I mean, these folks, tribal leaders, are politicians, and they might have certain issues that they would care to avoid. And I think, Enbridge has been in Wisconsin, has been a little thorny. Bad River has sued Enbridge and has demanded they remove the old Line 5 from the reservation and compensate them. And they're currently, that's currently a lawsuit that's ongoing, versus some other tribes, of particular, I think, Lac-Qui-Duré tribe, actually, they actually sold an easement to Enbridge, and they've received relatively recently their fifth payment for their right-of-way lease. We're not really seeing people, tribes claiming that, that there's unified force supporting Bad River in this lawsuit and in their relationship with Enbridge.
I want to spend a couple minutes, President Johnson did, on spearfishing and treaty rights. He talked about it at some length, and maybe people forget this was before my time in Wisconsin, just the bitter, I think, anger that white people had when, as you said, that court ruling came down enforcing the treaty rights of Native Americans in Wisconsin and elsewhere. Can you talk about how that issue is still relevant to be brought up today?
Yes, I was a young reporter at the Green Bay Press Gazette when that first emerged, and it was a difficult time to be a Native journalist. I had some difficulty covering that issue. I would sometimes be refused service at various businesses. People, again, when we talked earlier about this perception that Native people have "quote unquote" special rights, I think that was the overwhelming view of those who were opposed to Native people, taking advantage of their treaty rights in the ceded territories, particularly spearing. And I know there has been an argument that, well, Native people are going to spear, they should use, the technology that predates European contact, which is an argument that this does not make any sense. It doesn't play out in the sense that one wouldn't expect, people that support gun laws to talk about, munitions that were in use, when they wrote the Constitution. I mean, nobody's talking about using flintlocks, so it doesn't hold water, this argument. But people still feel, I think, quite strongly that Native people have special rights, even though, despite the fact that the tribal harvest is quite a bit lower. I did see a DNR study that sports anglers took between 26,000 and 300,000 walleye from lakes declared for spearing between 2008 and 2012 versus 31,000 in 2012, or an average of 157,000 over a five-year period for Native spearers. So, it's a very small amount. But I think it just, it must, you know, sort of stick in some people's craws that Native people are able to do this.
We'll leave it there for now. Mary, thanks again for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me.
Mary Annette Pember is a national correspondent for Indian Country Today. She joins us today to recap the 17th annual State of the Tribes address delivered today by John Johnson, Sr., president of the Lac des Flambeaux Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa.